WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. A major healthcare provider in the Shenandoah Valley cuts back, citing Republican cuts in last year's federal spending bill. Immigration advocates hope that state legislators will reject some of the amendments that Governor Spanberger made to bills addressing overreach by ICE. And how accessible is information that is supposed to be accessible to the public? This is the WMRA Daily for Monday, April 20th. A vote at last Thursday's Charlottesville City School Board meeting fell short of undoing the division's school resource officer program. The board removed Charlottesville police officers from schools in 2020, around the time of nationwide protests, but voted to bring them back last year. A coalition of 12 community groups launched a campaign pressuring the board to rethink that decision. Board member Ziana Bryant called for a vote to rescind the March 2025 motion, pointing to a lack of data supporting the return of officers. The vote was split, with 3 members in favor of removing officers, 3 against it, and the chair abstaining. Valley Health is reducing spending amid federal Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement cuts. The Virginia Mercury reports those federal cuts combined with other financial strains caused by the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which Republicans in Congress passed last summer. Valley Health's resulting downsizing includes cutting its observation unit at Winchester Medical Center to ending contracts for certain workers there and at 5 other locations. Observation units are used to monitor patients who are too sick to discharge but don't need to be admitted for longer care. With the cuts, Valley Health is joining a growing number of health systems or hospitals in Virginia that cite the federal law as a factor in staffing or service changes. Democrats in the General Assembly passed bills to help combat what they see as injustices by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Governor Abigail Spanberger signed some of those bills last week, but immigration advocates hope legislators will reject some that she amended. Radio IQ's Brad Kuttner reports.
It will soon be illegal for Virginia schools to use a student's immigration status to deny them an education. That effort and others are among reasons immigration advocates like Luis Aguilar with the group CASA are thanking the governor this week.
And we have the majority, I would say 2/3, did not receive an amendment. So it's quite good.
One signed effort limits the sharing of some data with federal agencies. Another extends the duration of driver privilege cards for non-citizens. CASA also supported, and Spanberger approved, new rules for businesses to protect employees from heat illness, the $15 minimum wage, and removing a farm worker exception from that new minimum wage. But they didn't have success on every issue. A bill to limit immigration arrests in courthouses was amended with language Aguilar says weakened it.
We think that enables ICE administrative warrants, which is completely what we do not want.
That bill and a short list of others made it into a letter CASA sent to elected officials asking them not to accept Spanberger's amendments. A bill aiming to ban the use of masks by federal immigration officers also made the list. Bill author Senator Saddam Saleem said changes include removing liability for the officers and moving much of the work under a state agency, which will weaken it.
That every time somebody wears a mask, am I getting kidnapped or is it law enforcement? I can't tell the difference anymore. That is what the big fear is among a lot of folks.
Legislators returned to Richmond Wednesday to consider these and other amendments from the governor. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Governor Spanberger has also amended gun safety bills the General Assembly passed this session. One limits possession of a magazine with a capacity of more than 15 rounds. Her changes clarify what weapons will be banned and exempts some semi-automatic weapons that are used for hunting. Another bill raises the minimum age to buy a handgun or assault firearm from 18 to 21 with some exclusions. The governor amended the bill to force private sales back under the oversight of Virginia State Police. Lawmakers will return to Richmond on Wednesday to discuss the changes. As we reported last week, one of the bills that Governor Spanberger signed this month will have Virginia joining the National Popular Vote Compact. Radio IQ's Michael Pope has more.
Virginia isn't exactly dropping out of the Electoral College, but now that it's joining the National Popular Vote Compact, those 13 electoral votes could go to whoever wins the popular vote nationwide, even if Virginia votes the other way. Here's Scott Drexel of National Popular Vote.
We've had five presidents come into office without winning the most votes nationwide. We have a system where every vote for president isn't equal from state to state for president. And of course, we have presidential campaigns that focus all of their attention on battleground states.
He says the people who wrote the Constitution did not plan for a winner-take-all system. That emerged in the 19th century. Trent England at Save Our States says the new system would violate the purpose of the Electoral College.
It would turn the whole country into a plurality, winner-take-all competition where you would encourage more candidates to run because you could win with a small regional plurality.
The deal doesn't kick in until states in the compact add up to a majority of Electoral College votes. Now that Virginia is on board, they're at 222 electoral votes, so they'll need 48 more before it takes effect. Michael Pope.
Governor Spanberger signed a bill last week that will allow Virginians to build tiny homes on their property. This could also include carriage houses, in-law suites, or converted garages. Buildings would be automatically approved if they meet local zoning and building costs. The law only applies to single-family properties. Local governments will also be required to limit permitting fees to $500 and cannot limit who homeowners rent to. The law will go into effect in July 2027. In Virginia, the cost of accessing public records can range from free to tens of thousands of dollars. That raises questions about how public that information really is. WHRO's Kunle Falayi has more.
As debate over public surveillance tools intensified last year, WHRO sent identical public record requests to nearly two dozen law enforcement agencies. Some departments provided the data for free, others quoted thousands of dollars, including more than $73,000 from the James City County Sheriff's Office. Under Virginia law, agencies can charge for the time it takes a public employee to search, review, and redact records. There is no cap on hourly rates. Transparency advocates say that high fees limit accountability and discourage the public from seeking information. Megan Ryan is the director of the Virginia Coalition of Open Governments. Here's what she says about the high cost of accessing police surveillance data.
If we don't have access to the underlying data, we don't have a way to analyze whether the data is being used correctly or in ways that don't benefit people.
Efforts to cap these fees have repeatedly failed in the General Assembly.
Kunle Falayi, reporting for the Virginia Center for Investigative Journalism at WHRO. Finally today, a final show in the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts 21st Century Art Gallery opened on Saturday before the space is closed as part of the facility's $261 million renovation. Radio IQ's Dave Cantor has more.
Blacker Than 100 Midnights Down in a Cypress Swamp focuses on the 1970s work of Mary Lovelace O'Neill. It was a period in the painter's creative life that found her maturing stylistically while also dealing with criticism. Valerie Castell Oliver, the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts curator of modern and contemporary art, said the painter was told her work was both too abstract and not black enough. In response, Lovelace O'Neill developed a non-figural series of work using a pigment called lamp black. Here's Lovelace O'Neill in 2022 discussing how she pushed back against her detractors.
I decided to, show them the way abstraction had played into African and that history in the diaspora and how it could be as Afrocentric as anything. So that just kind of cooled them out. They couldn't really figure out how to counter that.
The lamp black paintings were first presented at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art in 1979. Castell Oliver, who referred to the work's velvety texture, said the VMFA show is the first time some of those pieces will have been displayed together since then. The museum set to host an artist talk with Lovelace O'Neill on July 16th, and the show runs through August 2nd. I'm Dave Cantor.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Monday.